This podcast is sponsored by Great White Hot Sauce. It's a small batch, handmade hot sauce made specially for you. So if you like hot sauce, you'll love Great White Hot Sauce. It's the hot sauce that bites back. Find it at www.trygreatwhite.com. Ah, the mixtape. Everybody had them. Everybody made them. Everybody borrowed them. The perfect party mix. This episode, well, we're not really going to talk about mixtapes, but it's kind of a mixtape in its own. We're going to talk about a number of different subjects. Maybe you'll agree, maybe you'll disagree. Listen in and find out.
The KOFB Studio presents Milk Crates and Turntables, a music discussion podcast hosted by Scott McLean with his co-host, Jack Calabrese. Now, let's talk music. Enjoy the show.
All right. Well, welcome to Milk Crates and Turntables, a music discussion podcast, but you already know that because you're listening or watching. We're streaming live right now over Facebook Live, YouTube, and Twitch. If you want to get in touch with the show, let me say right off the bat, you can email us at milkcratesandturntables@gmail.com. That's milkcratesandturntables@gmail.com. If you have a suggestion, an opinion, a critique, anything like that, we're always open for it. So give us a push. And listen, if you've listened to the show and you like the show, then by all means, give us a 5-star rating, give us a good review, and tell a friend. Share it with your friends. Do whatever you want to do. But we appreciate the push. We appreciate the following. And we do it all for you. So without further ado, as my producer makes me do every week, I'm going to bring on my co-host, sometimes to my dismay, but, you know, that's what we do. It's what we do on this show. So without further ado, here we go. Let's bring on the expendable, disposable, replaceable. See, those are my words this week. My buddy and lifelong friend, Jack Calabrese.
Hey.
What's up, buddy?
How you doing?
You ready for a good show?
I am ready for a good show. And I think that we should actually talk about mixtapes.
Yeah, well, that this episode is pretty much that. It's every week we usually have a topic, but this week we're just going to kind of do a jambalaya, a cornucopia,
jambalaya
of stuff. So we're back on Facebook Live. We're back from our 30-day suspension.
We keep getting this taped up.
As Dave DePhillips, one of our viewers, just messaged in, "Welcome back, Jailbird."
like we like to say here in Boston, you are incarcerated.
We're incarcerated.
Incarcerated.
Hey, so do you know what last Saturday was, Jack?
Last Saturday, yes, I do know what last
you
Saturday
do.
Was.
What was it?
Last Saturday was basically Christmas for audiophiles, for geeky music lovers like you and I. It was Record Store Day.
I just thought it was Saturday.
No, it was Record Store Day.
Oh, Record Store Day. Yay!
It's Christmas. Yeah.
Yes, it was. And you shopped more than me.
Shopped more than you. It was a despicable, horrible bloodbath of my finances. It was just crazy. And even more than that, here I am. Come on, I'm 50 plus years old. And I got up at 4:30, 5 o'clock in the morning and was down waiting in line at Bull Moose Records in downtown Portsmouth at, I think I was in line at 10 of six.
Wow.
10 of six. And there were already a bunch of people that were already in line. I was ninth in line. So this Bull Moose actually opened at 8 o'clock. They usually open at 10, I believe. They opened a little bit earlier to let the crowd of in the you know, the herd of nerd in, so they could pick their records. By the time that they opened, you know, Bull Moose is a pretty big building, and it went the length of the building and around the corner up a block. There had to have been 200 people in line.
Wow.
And, you know, the conversations were as goofy as you would imagine, you know, talking about records, talking about special releases, talking about sound quality and audio equipment and concerts. There were no women in line.
So let me ask you this. Did you did you ask anybody around you, hey, what are you here for? What are you looking for inside?
Yes. Yes, did. I did. And you know what? Nobody would tell me.
I knew it.
Because they were absolutely convinced that whatever they told me, I was going to go in and take. You have to understand, for those of you that don't know what Record Store Day is. So Record Store Day was established in 2007 by a bunch of independent record stores. And the idea behind it was to create a day that celebrated independent record stores. And the way that they celebrated it is that they had special releases by artists like the Rolling Stones and Led Zeppelin and Pink Floyd and U2 and Lady Gaga and Madonna and Justin Timberlake and everybody in between. And what they do is they have these special releases. Some of them are only 500 copies around the world, or 1,000 copies around the world, or 2,000 copies. And some of them are larger, 10,000, 12,000, 15,000, and whatnot. But these are sought-after items by record collectors. And the crowd was kind of divided. I don't know if you saw the same thing, but in the line that I was in, it was probably 80% of people that really loved music and really wanted these records, and 20% of them were people that were looking to profiteer. They were buying records, and less than an hour later, they were on eBay for three times the price.
So, yeah. Yeah. So I go to the Record Rack in Pompano Beach, Florida. It's like 20 minutes away. Richie, the store owner, who might be a future guest on the show. He's been in selling for 50 years, so he's got some stories. So I was waiting outside. I got there about 10 past 8. There was about 9 people outside. And contrary to what you stated last week before Record Day.
Contrary? Are you telling me that I was wrong?
Well, you said it would be all white, pasty, middle-aged men, which you were right when I got in line. But the first, so what happened is they opened it and they only let X amount of people in, right? And because it's not a big store, and you can only buy one of each album, so there's no hoarding, and which I appreciated that. And the first two people to come out, it's kind of like a bar. If a bar only holds, you know, 100 people, two people leave, two people go in. The first two people that walked out, two girls, probably in their early 20s. And I said to myself, Jack isn't always right.
Jack is absolutely always right. I know those two girls. They were sent in by their father. He paid them an hourly wage to go and get his records.
So there was, when I finally get in, I'm looking in the Richie, the record store owner from the Record Rack in Pompano Beach, Florida. He had done a preview of what he had on his Instagram account. And there was one album, one copy of the Chemical Brothers, a colored disc. And when I got in there, it was gone. And the first thing I said to myself is, girls ruin everything.
They do.
Because I know that one copy was in one of those bags.
Girls stink, man. But did are you sure that the Chemical Brothers was on that release? Because you know that there's a second release in July.
Yes. Yeah, so. But I wanted that one.
Look at this. This is my Record Store Day haul. How disgusting is this?
That looks to me, now if I know the prices, so that's looking to me like $400 or so in albums. Am I wrong?
It was. Is my wife listening?
No. This is live.
It was between $300 and $400.
You see, I went in And I'll tell you, my list is a lot shorter than yours. I got Jim Messina, right? Jim Messina from the 70s group Loggins and Messina, the other half being Kenny Loggins. He had a surfer group, like, you know, that Dick Dale type of music, surfer music, called the Dragsters. I picked that up. I love surf music. It's never sad.
Well, that's only natural. You look like a surfer.
See?
You look like a surfer.
I tell my wife that all the time. She's like, okay. But she does it very sarcastically.
Yeah, yeah. You know,
but thank you for the validation. Thank you.
Bleach blonde, you know, razor thin, you know.
I got that surfer body.
Absolutely.
So I picked up that album called the Dragsters, right? I got Iggy Pop live at the Channel in Boston in 88. Which,
was at that show.
Yep. And who else was there?
Fetus Kelly.
Phil Kelly.
So it was me and my brother Jimmy, Nancy Blake, and Phil Kelly. And the interesting thing about that show was not only was Iggy Pop there, but his guitar player was Steve Jones of the Sex Pistols.
The Sex Pistols, yeah. I always get that wrong. Yeah, the Sex Pistols, yeah. Yeah, the one of the Sex Pistols is either nobody knows.
Yeah. Nobody knows any of the Sex Pistols except for Sid Vicious and Johnny Rotten.
Right. I also picked up The Police live at the Orpheum in 79 in Boston, the Orpheum Theater in Boston. Great album, by the way. Both of those, all three are home runs so far. I picked up a picture disc by the Deftones, a 90s group that probably a lot of... There you go, The Police live, as my co-host is showing it on the screen for the people that are listening on the podcast. I picked up the Deftones picture disc and a Joe Strummer Junk Doe picture disc, which is a great picture. It's a black and white him. He's probably 20 years old, 21, and he's kind of just looking at the camera almost like a mugshot. But the funny thing is the hole in the middle of the record is like almost right at the tip of his nose. So it looks like he's cockeyed staring at the hole. So, but it's a great, it was a good take. That ran me, those cost me about 160, 165. But I looked at the dude next to me, you know, of course, and everybody was very courteous. Like record buyers, they were like, they'd wait for you to do your little, you know, your little scan through the milk crates. And when you're done, I looked at the guy, I go, switch? He goes, switch. And we switched and we kind of, but I grabbed the albums and I just looked down and I said, I got to get the fuck out of here because I'm looking around and I had to keep it under two. I
had no such luck. So the record store that I went to, again, big line. So as you had indicated, you know, no duplicates. They didn't want you buying one and selling one or any of that crap. They only let one person in the store at a time.
Wow.
And you had 2 minutes.
What's this, beat the clock?
It was like a frigging game show, and I was rushing, and I have to tell you, I panicked, and I choked a little bit, and I bought things that I didn't really think I was going to buy, and I missed things that I wanted to buy. I was panicked, you know? You know, buying records in 2 minutes is just not a thing for me. I can do other things in 2 minutes. Sometimes well into 2 minutes.
Here we go. Okay.
Sometimes well into 2 minutes. Have you met both of my kids?
There you go. All right. Yeah, I knew that was coming.
So, you know, so, I mean, you had to act, you know, really, really fast. So I was whipping through. Now, they were kind enough that they actually put all of the releases in alphabetical order. And they had somebody in the record store that would answer questions for you and assist. But I was still, I kind of went blank and was just flipping through and grabbing stuff and just saying, you know what, I'll worry about it later. And I got some great stuff. Kenny Dorham live. Echo and the Bunnymen live. We got a bunch of blues compilations. Donnie Hathaway, The Police, having a party with Jonathan Richman of The Modern Lovers.
Modern Lovers.
Yeah.
From Boston.
Nujabes, Son Little, Richard Hell and the Voivods, The Clash, Tears for Fears. I even picked up a Grateful Dead box set, even though I'm not a huge Dead fan. I know I've got a couple of friends that love the Dead and would love to have that. So, you know, this may end up being a Christmas present. for somebody. Although those profiteers that are on eBay, that Grateful Dead, which I think was $129, I think it's an 8-disc set, is going for almost $500 right now.
It's insane.
I could actually dump that one and pay for all the rest of them. Probably won't do that just because I think it's kind of a douchey move, but it would have been a smart move.
Money is king, buddy. Yeah. Money is king. I always have that syndrome. I'd have everything in my head, what I want at the record store. And as soon as I walked in, I turn into a fucking vinyl zombie. Like, I just forget everything.
You know what you got to do? You got to do what I'm starting to do. Put a list on your phone.
Well, I would do that, but I'd probably forget my phone. I don't know. I'd forget to look. I just get caught up in everything. Like, I forget what's on my list, and I start looking at other things. It's like somebody, we were talking about this the other day, like this donut place down around here called Dandy Donuts. I think it started in Danvers, Massachusetts, or Marblehead, Massachusetts, but they have them down here, and they have a drive-thru. And I'm like, why the fuck would anybody go through a donut drive-thru? Like, don't you want to look at the donuts? Like, maybe you'll change your mind. Maybe instead of getting that plain cruller, you might want the chocolate-covered apple fritter. Like, but you don't see it in the drive-thru.
Like, you know what I, you know what I like, donut? Scott?
What?
I like the way you say donut.
Yeah, I like donuts, too.
Donuts. Ooh, you get, like a little, get a little giddy there.
Okay, let's move. So Record Store Day was a success.
It was hilarious. You know what I mean? I was sitting in line, or standing in line, I should say, and making fun of the people all around me. I did a couple of Facebook texts or posts that, you know, wondered if all of the guys that were in line, if their mom and dad are going to be mad when they're playing their records too loud later on, these 50-year-old guys that still live in the basement. And I was saying those jokes to Deb, and she goes, "Hey, dipshit, you were in line."
And the thing is, in Florida, there's no basements. There's really no attics either.
Yeah.
So the next one is in July, correct?
July 17th. So the question is, are you going to go?
Of course I am.
Me too.
Yeah, of course I am.
I might actually go down even earlier so I can get a donut first.
I say you should fly down here and go with me.
Oh, God.
In July. That's what you want to be, in South Florida in July. Although it's just as hot up there as it is down here in July.
Yeah, that's fine.
That's the thing. But yeah, so, okay, good successful Saturday for both of us. We got some good stuff. So this show, like it says, you know, it's a mixtape, music trivia mixtape. So I have set up for you, my friend, 5 opinion questions and a bunch of trivia questions and a handful of did you knows. So this is going to be a very informative episode, or a, you know, wow, I never knew that. Although I think people come away from every episode saying that, which is our goal, is to, you know, educate people. So what do we got here? Hey, the musical. Okay, listen, this on the screen right now, for all the YouTube, for all the people watching on YouTube and Facebook and all the podcast listeners, find my new friend on YouTube. His channel is The Music Hole, okay? And I would hopefully one day have him on here as a guest with me and Jack. He's listened to over 40,000 albums, all right? And he reviews albums, and he reviews the type of albums you want reviewed. You want stuff that you've never heard. Maybe you've never heard it before. He has a very eclectic taste in music. I was scanning through it last night, and I had to put the phone down because I kept going to different videos. But go to my buddy, The Music Hole. Go to his YouTube channel and check out some reviews. Give him some comments. Let him know what's up. I'm glad he's watching the show. And hey, man, like I said, get with me. You can email me at milkcratesandturntables@gmail.com, and maybe we'll set you up and bring you on the podcast. So check him out. Check him out. He's a great dude. I just watching his videos, man. He's got a great vibe.
40,000 albums. Wouldn't you love to hear his top 10?
Well, we're gonna get him on. I have a funny feeling in the near future he'll be on the show. And with all that under his belt, he might be a reoccurring guest. We got to talk to him. I'll push his show, my co-host. He'll push your channel. So thanks for tuning in, my new friend.
What if Beauty and the Beat by the Go-Go's is in his top 10?
Oh, don't listen to him. Don't listen to him. So what we're going to do, all right, then you're on, buddy. Email me and we'll set it up.
Wouldn't it be hilarious? Come on, 40,000 records. Like, give us your top three records. And if he said, oh, I loved Kiss Alive 2. I loved Lover Boy's third album, you know, the one that didn't have any hits on it. And I'm a big BTS fan. Which I don't think will be the case. I would imagine that he probably has amazing, amazing taste.
See, right away, our new friend, the musical, I really don't know his first name, but I'll get it. He immediately messaged back, great songs off that album, but at the moment, I didn't like every song on it. And he's very good at, he goes back, he changes his mind. Like, there's things, there's an album that he listened to. It was actually one of your boys, Jack. Who's your favorite artists? What's his name?
He sings like this.
Tom Waits. He did a review about a Tom Waits album that he actually had messed up headphones. This is according to him. And he didn't he didn't hear the whole thing, and he gave a kind of a shitty review. Then he finally got good headphones and listened to it, and he went right back and gave it a 10.
You know, even if he had good headphones right out of the gate, you know, not everybody gets or appreciates Tom Waits. He's an acquired taste. There's no question about it. You know, very, very gravelly, you know, voice, you know, and he can be really out there, different instrumentation and whatnot. I love Tom Waits. My wife actually turned me on to him. And one of my favorite things about Tom Waits was, you know, my dad was the one that turned me on to music. You know, he had a big record collection when I was a kid. And he saw Elvis and Neil Diamond, and, you know, he was into all that 50s stuff. And he was the guy that actually first brought home Patti Smith and Elvis Costello and things like that, until he went like totally country. But as adults, we only went to one concert together, and it was a couple of years before he passed. And it was Tom Waits down in Atlanta. One of my favorite memories and one of my favorite artists. Just an incredible night.
Nice. All right, so
I just figured you'd want to hear a heartwarming story to kind of mix things up a little bit.
Yeah, my heart's just dripping out of my body right now, Jack. Let's get on with
like this. A honey dipped donut.
It's a donut.
Like a donut.
So, okay, let's get into some opinion questions. First of all, what kind of sound system did you have growing up? What did you have in the basement?
Okay. So initially it was dad's system, which was a Scott, you know, piece of crap system. Then I had my own stereo system, which was purchased kind of on the black market, so to speak. I'm not proud of it, but, you know, that's just how things were done back then. I had a Hitachi receiver. I had one of the first CD players, I think, in Winthrop. And I had JVC speakers initially. I can't remember what kind of cassette player I had. It might have been a TIAC.
TIAC, turntable.
No, cassette player. The turntable player, that okay. I had was a Techniques.
Ah, nice.
Like most people, you know, like Techniques. People, yeah. And then I graduated to a Pioneer and then got to a Marantz. And then at one point I actually had a Thorin's, which is a really nice turntable.
I had the Sansui 100 watt receiver, which is very sought after today.
Sansui's, you know, vintage stuff, amazing stuff.
Yeah. My father was an audiophile, and, you know, like he said, his stuff always fell off the back of the truck. So, you know, I think it was a common occurrence back then. So I had the Sansui which I actually replaced. I bought one. I went out and I sought it out, and I actually have it in my, I don't use it, but I just have it.
Backup.
I had the Technics turntable. I had the Marantz double cassette deck for making mixtapes, which was great. And I had a pair of Bose 301s. I've always been a Bose guy.
Yeah, I got 901s here. I have a mixed system in terms of speakers. I have I have a set of Klipsch and a set of 901s in this small room. There's way more power in here than I need.
Yeah, today I have a Marantz 2270. That's a beast, that thing. I have a Project turntable and four Bose 901s.
Yeah.
No need for the cassette.
Most of the things that are driving my sound in here, I have a Rotel amp, a Rotel preamp, Rotel receiver, Rotel cassette deck, Rotel CD player, and a really nice Technics turntable that, believe it or not, I found at a yard sale. I think the one that I have retails, you know, I don't even think they make him anymore, but you can find him on eBay for like $500 or $600. And it was one of those things where I walked up, saw it, grabbed it, and said, "What do you want for this?" And the guy was like, "Give me $40.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sweet.
Okay. So let's get into some opinion questions. If you're starting a band and you're looking for a lead singer and you have a choice, Scott Weiland from STP, Stone Temple Pilots, or Eddie Vedder from Pearl Jam?
Eddie Vedder.
For a frontman?
No question about it. No, not even a second thought.
Okay.
Better writer. I think that I'm not sure that Eddie Vedder possesses as much charisma on stage as Scott Weiland did. But Scott Weiland, as much as I loved his music and I loved his persona, he was a total fuck up.
So this is what we have so far for our bands. You have David Gilmour and Eddie Vedder.
Well, wait a minute. I didn't know that we were actually mixing and matching to, you know, put a band together. You asked me one individual question.
If you paid attention sometimes, you'd see that I asked you last week for a lead guitarist.
Yeah, but that was an isolated question. You weren't saying that we were going to actually build a band around David Gilmour.
Because we're live and I wanted to set you up.
Oh, wow. Well, you know, you can't ask me questions like that. You know, I'm not terribly bright.
Not terribly bright. Okay. So, and I have Jimmy Page and Scott Weiland. So, we'll see.
Two heroin addicts. Great. Enjoy all the canceled gigs, you fucking idiot.
What's amazing, though, is it just once again shows on what side of the spectrum each one of us is in our music taste.
Well, yeah, so you got a great band going there. You got a sloppy guitar player and a sloppy heroin addict. Oh, and by the way, you got
two very
your sloppy guitar player was a heroin addict as well.
But you know what? You have two very boring people up on stage. You might as well just put the cars together because you got two guys that just stand there.
Eddie Vedder does not just stand. Have you ever seen Pearl Jam in concert?
I have. Okay, he runs around a little bit, but he's no Scott Weiland on stage. Scott Weiland is one of the greatest frontmen I've seen live. He controlled the stage. He's very underrated also. Because
he had his shit together. When is he going on tour again? Sorry.
He's dead.
Which is really sad. I'm just, you know, busting balls.
You're mean. You're just mean.
He was a very charismatic, performer. And, you know, I have to tell you, it's interesting that you actually mention Eddie Vedder and Scott Weiland, because Scott Weiland used to get accused of stealing Eddie's, you know, sound. And I never got that. I thought that there was enough differentiation there. And I thought Scott Weiland was a great, great singer. And I agree with you. I think that Stone Temple Pilots was a dreadfully, dreadfully underrated band.
They so were. I mean, he commanded the stage. He was just a showman. Even when he was with
Velvet Revolver.
Yeah. I mean, the dude just had a presence about him. You know, again, he wasn't long for this world. I think we could probably have figured that out. But so far, if people were going to go see a band live, I think they're going to my band first. So, you know.
Yeah, that's okay. More room for me to dance around like an idiot. You can be jammed up with your Jimmy Page and your man crush, Scott Weiland.
You don't have to dance to do that, Jack. You don't have to dance. Oh, good Lord. I can't believe Dave Phillips, the king of the 45s, just fucking messaged in Rob Thomas. If I could scrub a comment, that would be it. Rob Thomas. We're talking Scott Weiland and Eddie Vedder. And he brings up Matchbox 42 or whatever the fuck they're called.
Matchbox 20. Hey, you know what? Look, yeah, whatever. Look, not for nothing.
I love
Rob Thomas is a talented guy, great singer, but he is nowhere close to being in the league of Eddie Vedder or Scott Weiland.
No. Okay. Next question. Why is Cat Stevens in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame and America isn't? How does that fucking work?
I think Cat Stevens was regarded as more influential. I think that America is kind of disregarded as one of those soft rock 70s bands. Maybe underrated. I mean, look, America had a lot of hits.
In 2006, America was inducted into the Vocal Group Hall of Fame.
Okay? Oh, see, they got their Hall of Fame nod.
Yeah. And 6 years later, they were given a star in the Hollywood Walk of Fame for their contribution to music. But the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame will put the fucking Go-Go's in before America. Yeah, no. Sorry. Not buying that. Anyways, next opinion question.
Wait a minute. You're cutting that off?
I'm done with that one.
Do you really think that America belongs in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame?
Well, I think if Cat Stevens is in there and the Go-Go's
Cat Stevens
are in there,
is a bigger artist, was more influential, a better songwriter.
He fell off the face of the earth after Father and Son or whatever. He fell off the face of the earth. He disappeared. He quit.
Wait a minute. Answer the question. Why does America belong in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame?
And my answer is, if Cat Stevens is
that's
in.
That's not an answer.
That's my answer.
That's not an answer. You can't bounce it off into another artist. Why does, on their own merit, why does America belong in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame?
I think their bodies.
Come on, Scott.
I just think their body of music was really good. They were very prominent in the entire decade of the 70s. They rolled into the 80s. They have the record sales for it. I just think that they're not edgy enough. They don't, Cat Stevens became, the whole, he dropped off and became like, he became a Muslim, which I think was a bad rap. People condemned him for that, which is fucked up if you ask me.
He wanted to follow his beliefs. He believed in. So I
think he got into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame as a we're sorry type thing. Yeah. But I think America has a great body of music. I think they have the record sales. And who knows what the criteria is for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame? We don't know.
Let's mix it up just a little bit before we leave this topic, right? So. Let's not compare America to the Go-Go's, right? The Go-Go's, you've heard me say ad nauseum that they did something special, right? But let's compare them to, Joan Jett is in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, right? Right,
yeah.
Who had more hits, Joan Jett or America?
I'd say it's close.
No, I think it was America.
Yeah, I'd say Joan Jett had a handful in the 80s. When she was on her own.
Now, I have to tell you, I'm flying without a net here. I'd have to look up, but I would venture to guess that America has certainly been around a lot longer, right?
Right.
Certainly, I think, had more hits and had more success than Joan Jett. Maybe not now, because they're old, and that I don't think they tour nearly as much, and they really haven't put out any new music. But I think that you can bring up the comparison. And question why, look, the Love and Spoonful are in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
So let's go with this. So if you listen to if you look at their hall of their greatest hits, Horse with No Name, Sandman, I Need You, Everyone I Meet Is from California, Ventura Highway, Don't Cross the River, Only in Your Heart, Muskrat Love, Try Another, Tin Man, Lonely People, Sister Golden Hair, Daisy Jane, Woman Tonight, Today's the Day, Amber Cascades, You Can Do Magic. That was their 80s thing, right? Right Before Your Eyes and The Border. So they had a chunk of hits.
They did.
I just don't think that they're, you know. Anyways.
Wait, 16 studio albums. They had 47 singles.
Yeah.
Two Billboard Hot 100, three adult contemporary number ones. You know, I mean, they had a very, very successful, you know, career. There's no question about it.
The body of work is so worth it, but Cat Stevens is in. Anyways, next question. Smokey Robinson or Marvin Gaye? Now tread lightly here, buddy.
Ugh.
Smokey Robinson or Marvin Gaye?
Is this part of the band?
No, it's not part of the band.
I love them both for different reasons, but my heart goes to Marvin Gaye.
I knew it. And I'm a Smokey guy.
I love Smokey too. I saw him a couple of years ago. Brilliant songwriter.
You just self-admitted you're a Marvin guy, so you know. Don't jump into my lane.
I can like them both.
You know why I like Smokey? Because when Smokey sings, I hear violins.
You're an idiot. No, you want me to end this conversation in terms of Marvin Gaye and Smokey Robinson?
You're gonna log off?
No. What's going on? That album is a masterpiece.
Oh, I mean, listen.
That album is a masterpiece. So, you know, at one point we'll probably
We're not talking albums. We're not talking albums. We're just talking singers. We're just talking like, who do you like as a singer, Marvin Gaye or Smokey Robinson? Because I'm not going to compare Marvin Gaye's, you know, What's Going On. That is an absolute masterpiece. That's a perfect album.
Yeah.
You know?
Smokey has got... He's got his own thing, man. That Smokey kind of high falsetto.
And he's still a handsome bastard. So don't. Do not insult Smokey Robinson. You just did.
Have you ever seen Smokey Robinson in concert?
I haven't, actually.
I have.
Never had a chance.
Fuck yourself.
What's that?
I have.
Okay. So, and
I'm a bigger fan. You're a fake Smokey fan.
Well, sorry I served my country.
You're a jokey Smokey fan.
Sorry I served my country for 10 years and didn't see any concerts.
Thank
what
you
were you doing? Bad-mouthing America and smoking dope? Draft dodger.
Yeah, you know, while you were serving in the military, I was out getting high and listening to America albums.
Touche, my friend. Touche. Okay. Next question.
Horse with No Name is a masterpiece, man.
It is, actually. That song is, actually, you know. After how many days did he let the horse run free? Come
Nine.
On. All right. Took you too long.
Nine days.
In my opinion. Took you too long, but okay. Our new buddy Cole asked us, how old are you two? Just wondering. I'm 35. I'm 57, and my buddy Jack is, well, he says 50-something. He won't say.
I'm 56.
Okay. So that's why we're a little more seasoned, my friend.
We're only a year apart.
Yeah, yeah. I'll always be older than you. Don't forget that.
How did you graduate 2 years ahead of me?
I was smart.
Wow. Must have been those 3 years I spent in eighth grade.
I graduated when I was seven. I was 16 as a senior. I graduated when I was 17.
They tried to shuffle you right on through, didn't they?
Yeah, was that a good thing or a bad thing? I could never figure it out. Okay, next question. What singer would you not want to be stranded on a desert island with?
Smokey Robinson. No, just kidding.
I don't know. I might fall in love with Smokey. That relationship might change. Might change me.
What singer would I not be one of stranded on? Meatloaf.
What? I'm telling you, Meatloaf, you might want him because if shit goes south, he's got him sustained for at least a month.
No, dude, we're on a stranded island.
What, Mom?
There's limited food. Who's getting all the food?
Meatloaf.
So what was the line in Rocky Horror Picture Show?
I have no idea.
Oh, did you see Rocky Horror Picture Show?
I have.
All right. When they bring out the tray and they lift up the serving lid and everybody in the audience yells, "Meatloaf again," because it's Meatloaf's head on the serving tray.
That's cool.
The whole audience yells, "Meatloaf again."
So did you see Rocky Horror Picture Show in the movies?
I did. I saw it in New Jersey. It was insane. They threw buckets of water at me in that place. I was terrorizing New Jerseyites.
Yeah.
So the person I wouldn't want to be stranded on a desert island with, believe it or not, is my favorite artist of all time, Morrissey. I would not want to be stuck on a desert island with that queen. I think he'd be useless to me. I don't think he would lift a finger to help. I just would not want to be. And I'd have to listen to all his dark tales.
You know what would be hilarious to see?
I love
it. You get a skit like on Saturday Night Live? Meatloaf and Morrissey stuck on a desert island together.
Okay, let me see. You have 30 seconds to ask David Bowie a question. What would you ask? The clock's ticking.
I would ask why he didn't get along with Elton John.
Ah, okay.
Those guys, for whatever reason, just never hit it off.
Okay, that's a legitimate question.
Never hit it off. Or I would ask him why the whole Stevie Ray Vaughan thing didn't happen on the Let's Dance or the Serious Moonlight Tour.
Well, you had one question. The 30 seconds is up, buddy. Stop.
Or I would ask him.
Oh, Jesus.
Hello, David Bowie. If you were stuck on a desert island, would you like to be on there with Morrissey?
I would ask
Meatloaf?
I would ask him why he was jealous of Morrissey, because he was. He had this thing. Morrissey toured with Bowie, and David Bowie came up, and Morrissey in the early 90s had an immense following, right? He was at his apex, and Bowie seemed to have a little issue with that. So what he would do is he came up with this idea where Morrissey would sing a Bowie song at the end, and halfway through the song, Bowie would come on stage with him. And they'd sing a couple of, you know, verses of the song, and then Morrissey would just like exit, and Bowie would pick up the show from there.
Oh, that's kind of cool.
No, it's not, because he didn't want to give Morrissey the opportunity to end the show and let, you know, the fans who came to see Morrissey, a lot of them, give him his due. So Bowie,
you think that David Bowie planned that intentionally because he didn't want Morrissey to get his fanfare and.
Yeah.
You know, people doing, you know, standing ovations or whatever the case might
be. Morrissey walked off the tour. He said, enough of this shit. He said, there's no other reason for that. What band, whoever does that, did Kiss do that to, who was their backup band that they pushed? They pushed a lot of them, right?
Yeah. They always had some.
Yeah. So they never came on stage during their act and then just kind of leave the stage. Every performer needs to finish their act. I've never seen anything like that.
Yeah, Bowie always pushed the boundaries. He may have thought that it would have been a dramatic way to actually start the show. I think
he was a prima donna. I think he didn't like the fact that a lot of Morrissey fans were coming to those shows. Because, again, Morrissey was at his apex then. And Morrissey didn't realize.
And David Bowie was not. David Bowie's career suffered in the 90s.
And that's what I'm saying. So he did that, and Bowie, the Morrissey is quoted as saying, I walked off that tour because I wasn't going to kneel at the throne of Bowie.
Yeah, you know, another whiny comment from Morrissey. The guy's a pain in the ass.
Hey, don't make me come through that fucking screen. I don't talk about Morrissey, buddy.
I know. There are ravenous, goofy, weirdo Morrissey fans that go buy all his records and – you know, at 57 years old, still wear his T-shirts. And
I do. I do. Okay, let's get into a little trivia question for you. How much was the price of a call when Tommy Two-Tone wanted to call Jenny?
A dime.
Good call. All right, buddy. You got it. What video beat Thriller for Video of the Year at the first ever MTV Video Music Awards?
Ooh, that's a good question. I don't think I know that. Aha, Take on Me.
No, that came later. It was The Cars, You Might Think.
That was the, wait a minute, that was the first MTV?
What video beat out Thriller for Video of the Year at the first ever MTV Video Music Awards? Thriller, remember, came out, that didn't come out late. That was the early 80s.
No.
That was like 84, I think it was 84. MTV had been around since 81.
I don't know, man.
Oh, don't, trust me. Trust me.
Okay. I don't buy that one.
Okay. I got a Phil Kelly question.
Phil Kelly's hair?
Yeah. The Carpenters song Superstar was written about who?
David Bowie.
No, no.
Elvis.
It is a single artist, though. You're right. Eric Clapton. Yeah. Okay,
hasn't he gone off the deep end? Isn't he off the rails with like COVID and the vaccine? He had a bad reaction to the COVID vaccine.
Well, I'm the guy who wanted Eric Clapton to be in the helicopter instead of Stevie Ray Vaughan. So, you know, talking to the wrong guy.
That's.
I just got a pre-sale alert to get Eric Clapton's coming to the Hard Rock Hotel and Casino.
Will you go?
No, I'm not going.
Why not?
I'm not a Clapton. I'm not a big Clapton fan.
Apparently not.
No, I'd want to hear him sing Badge, and then I'd leave. I do love that song. I like Clapton songs, but I've just never really been a huge fan. So, okay. Here's an easy one for you. Van Halen famously banned what color M&Ms in their dressing rooms?
Yeah, the brown M&Ms. Don't eat the brown M&Ms.
Okay, we'll get
you. Do you know why they did that?
What's that?
Do you know why they did that?
Just to be assholes? I don't know.
So I think you're right. I think they probably thought it was a goof initially. But as the years went by, you know, there were persistent rumors and persistent questions about why they did that. David Lee Roth did an interview, and it was probably many interviews where he explained this. And what he said was they put that in their rider to make sure that the local promoters were actually paying attention to the specific details of what they needed. And they felt that if they got backstage and they saw that there were brown M&Ms in the bowl, that more than likely a lot of the other stuff that they had requested, whether it was the way that the stage was laid out or the local support or, you know, the catering or any of that stuff, that the details would not have been adhered to as closely as they wanted them to. Now, in my opinion, I think they fucking made that shit up after the fact. I think they did it initially because they thought it was funny.
Yeah, because they could.
And you know what? It was kind of funny.
Okay, who was the youngest Beatle?
The youngest Beatle was George.
Okay. Paul McCartney and John Lennon wrote what song for the Rolling Stones?
They wrote, I know this. I Love You, Man.
Huh?
I Want to Be Your Man.
Bingo. Good pull. You were lucky. You dodged a bullet. I was about to dog you.
My boy is wicked smart.
Okay. I'm just going to be a Van Halen brown M&M asshole. Which year did Culture Club release Karma Chameleon? Although it was a huge hit, it was everywhere.
82.
83. Close. I within a year, I usually give.
Yeah, I was probably only off by months. Yeah. Were you a Culture Club fan when they first came out?
I actually was one of the people that bought their first album, and I still say to this day that their first album is an excellent album. It's not the Culture Club that people that they had, they rushed out and started making albums just because they wanted to make money and shitty videos. The first album was a really good album. It's a mix of reggae.
Culture Club belong in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
No, I don't think a lot of those 80s bands don't. The longevity just wasn't there. The body work.
Wait a minute. Rattle off a couple of Culture Club hits for me. So, Do You Really Want to Hurt Me? Karma Chameleon.
Time.
Uh, Time.
They did that.
The Poison Mind.
Yeah.
War is Stupid. Yeah. This Song is Stupid. Whatever the case might be. Right. They had a lot of hits. Were they a bigger band than America?
No. America was dominated. They were one of those dominant groups in the 70s. America was no joke, though. They weren't. There was no videos pushing them. They were all FM. They were all AM and FM. So if what you heard and what you saw in Teen Beat magazine, that was, America was legit. Culture Club became a money machine, you know. And if Boy George didn't dress up the way he did, again, would that make them less appealing to a young audience, right?
Do you think his sexual preference hurts him? Or hurt their career?
I don't think that ever matters in music. I think that's like I said, Cat Stevens got condemned for changing religions and becoming Muslim. But you know, if he was gay, then no one would ever say anything. I mean, forever we were always hearing, oh, David Bowie was gay, Rod Stewart was gay, Mick Jagger was gay with David Bowie. I mean, we heard all these things growing up. So gay didn't really, it was a shocker, but you know, I think Freddie Mercury kind of broke the glass ceiling on that, and everybody said, you know what, let's lay off all that stuff, you know. Although and Rob Halford, probably one of the greatest deceptions in the history of music, he was doing it right in front of their eyes, and they were so caught up in the music and the whole leather scene and, you know, the badass, you know, heavy metal, that no one realized he was wearing like S&M outfits.
Sure.
And so that was one of the greatest deceptions in music history. But I don't think Culture Club will be, listen, they might be mentioned. They might get on a list someday, but the Smiths should go in before Culture Club. So that's all I say. This is an interesting question from our buddy Cole. Is Tears for Fears in the Hall of Fame? No.
They are not.
Should they be?
I don't know that. They've had
a whole album.
Well, double wait a minute. Album. What do you mean a boatload of hits?
Well, okay. I'm not going to name them off the top of my head, but
Everybody Wants to Rule the World, Shout, Head Over Heels, Sowing the Seeds of Love.
Keep going.
Sowing the Seeds of Love, and Sowing the Seeds of Love.
So
they're hurting. I think
Sowing the Seeds of Love, Everybody Wants to Rule the World, Women in Chains, Shout, Head Over Heels, Mad World, Pale Shelter, I Believe, Laid So Low, Mother's Talk.
Scott, you're rattling off songs that most people don't know. The first handful, absolutely.
So no one's heard of Mad World?
No, I keep going. Go down the list a little bit further. Shelter? What?
Pale Shelter?
How does it go?
It's no, I know. I'm sorry, Scott.
That's Gimme Shelter.
Yeah. I'll tell you how it goes. All right, let's see. Okay, so we don't get this video pulled down. That's it for that. Our buddy Cole.
Look, I'm a huge Tears for Fears fan. As a matter of fact, at Record Store Day, I bought Tears for Fears live at Massey Hall, Toronto, Canada, 1985.
Okay. So
they're a great band, but
they have – and then Change, Advice for the Young and Hot, which is probably my favorite Tears for Fears song. Fucking love that song. I really do. I really do. It's just Advice for the Young and Hot. It's a great fucking song. I mean, you're so fucking condescending.
I love Tears for Fears.
So should they be in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame? Will they get consideration?
I don't think so. If they do, it's not for a while. I think there are a lot of people in front of them. Let me put it that way.
The Smiths.
I think there are a lot of people in front of them. I think that they would be a tough call. I'm not sure that people look at that band as having the longevity necessary to And I'm not saying me. You know, again, I've seen Tears for Fears in concert a number of times. My wife loves them. Everybody in my family loves Tears for Fears. Even there was a release or two when they actually split up, where it was only one of them that put it out. And even that record is very good. Those guys are
amazing. Roland, I forget, he has Achenborg.
Roland Kirk?
He has some. Really. Okay, what year did Michael Jackson die?
2002.
No, 2009.
Wow.
See, these are weird. Like, years are kind of
funny. Yeah, it's, you know what, okay, I have no idea. Like, a lot of it's a blur. Like, if you ask me when Prince died, I'm not sure that I could tell you.
Kelly Christopher said Depeche Mode should be in there, too. They
aren't
are.
Aren't they in there?
They are. They are.
Yeah. And it's somebody else.
I love my buddy Kelly, but he needs to do some research before.
Somebody else just posted something of another band that
Duran,
I think.
Duran Duran.
I think Duran Duran's in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
My buddy Kelly, he's hanging in there. I love Kelly. He's a good
guy. Keep him coming, Kelly. Keep him coming, brother.
Just go to the list of who's in there.
There's another comment from Kelly Christopher. I think the Beatles should be in the Rock and Roll
Hall. I think the Rolling Stones should be in there.
They're long overdue.
He's getting killed. Okay, next question. This is a tough one, but it's, you know, in which year did Lionel Richie release "Hello"?
Oh my God! I did that pretty good. In which year did Lionel Richie die? Lionel Richie didn't die; just his career died.
Okay.
Hello, it was 1987.
Nope, 1984. What year? This one is weird. This one got me. Wait a minute. This son of a, you know, Kevin Corcoran really knows how to push my buttons too. Bread. I fucking hate Bread.
Oh my God. You know what? A couple of years ago, I saw a Bread in America double bill. Best sleep I've ever gotten in my entire life.
Anyways, back to the question. What year did the Killers release Mr. Brightside?
Oh, holy shit. 92.
Wow, you're way the fuck off. You're cold. Let's play this game. You're freezing cold.
Is it 90?
Come on, you're a Killers guy.
I like them, but the years are they're all melding
this
together.
One got me. I'll give you this one. And Diane, actually, I think Diane Klaus was closer than you.
2015.
You said 91.
No, so, I said 92.
92. It was released. Mr. Brightside was released in 2003.
That was only 11 years off.
Okay. Who recorded Proud Mary first? Ike and Tina Turner or Creedence Clearwater Revival?
Creedence Clearwater Revival.
All right. I got you back on track. You two wrote the song Stuck in a Moment about what late frontman?
Michael Hutchence.
Good boy. There you go. Okay. Who is Stevland Hardaway Judkins?
Stevland Hardaway Judkins. Tiny Tim.
Mr. Stevie Wonder.
Oh, man. I can't believe I didn't know that, but I didn't know that.
Who is Paul David Hewson?
Bono.
Very good. Here's an easy one. Who is Anna Mae Bullock?
Tina Turner.
Yep. Who is Georgios Karakos Paniato?
Oof. Richie Valens.
George Michael.
George Michael. Oh, my God.
Yeah. You got any questions for me? Why am I the Alex Trebek of the show?
If you were on a desert island and you needed a drummer for your band.
All right. Hey, did you know that the group Heart does not have an original member in it?
Not nobody anymore.
None. Not one original member.
So did they license their name out and they have somebody like doing the music of Heart?
No, they started off Heart with just, it was all guys. And I forget the name. They were under another name. And then they changed to Heart, right? And then they went to Hocus Pocus. And then Ann and Nancy Wilson joined the band. And they became Heart again. And then as they went on, the original, I think there was three of them left, or two of them left, they ended up leaving the band. So there's not one original member in Heart.
Hmm.
Yeah. Everybody thinks Ann and Nancy Wilson started that band, right? Shows you how prominent they were in the music world. They get credit for everything in that band. Whereas actually Nancy Wilson, or was it? Yeah, Nancy Wilson wasn't actually the lead guitarist. She was the rhythm guitarist, wasn't she?
Yeah.
But she played
She was. She was.
But she got a lot. She got all the airtime. She got all the FaceTime, you know? Well, her sister got a lot of FaceTime because the videos, they only showed her face. Ann Wilson, unfortunately. 80s fat shaming was really out there in the 80s. It was right up front. Well, listen, buddy.
What band in the 50s or early 60s did Jimi Hendrix play guitar in? For what famous iconic rock and roll musician?
In the 50s.
Late 50s, early 60s.
Did he play with James Brown?
No.
Bootsy Collins played with James Brown.
You're kind of in the right ballpark.
I don't know. Tell me.
Little Richard.
Little Richard. Fuck. I knew it was that's one of those things. Well, listen, we got... I'm going to end it with this one, okay? Because we're starting to... So the song Yesterday by the Beatles, as we know, is the most covered song of all time, right?
Never heard of it.
And like all their other songs, it was credited with Lennon and McCartney. But it was all Paul McCartney, right?
Yeah.
He came up with the melody first and used the dummy lyrics called Scrambled Eggs.
Yep.
Right? So just think if he didn't change the lyrics... It would go, scrambled eggs. All my ketchup seems so far away. No, I don't eat toast with marmalade. Oh, I could eat some scrambled eggs.
Disturbing on a number of different levels. Number one, that you took the time to actually write that out. Number two, that you sang that. Number three, that you put ketchup on your fucking scrambled eggs. What's wrong with you?
I'm American. That's why. That's why I do it. Every good American puts ketchup on their eggs.
Gross.
All right. Listen.
You know, someday you're going to make a fine adult. You eat like a fucking five-year-old.
Did you see my sandwich today?
No.
A plain donut with sausage, egg, and cheese.
Donut.
A plain donut.
Donut.
It was good. Okay, listen. We're going to wrap this up. As usual, I want to thank everybody for viewing and watching. I want to thank everyone for listening.
Intellectually stimulating show.
It was light. It was light. Sometimes we got to do that. I want to thank again everybody. If you like the podcast, please give it 5 stars. Give it a good rating. Tell your friends about it. Share it. We'd appreciate the push. We do this every Wednesday night live. The podcast will be published the next day. Someone told me I have something in my teeth. I don't think so. I don't think so. Oh, they were talking to you. We will be back next week. Jack, hang on. And to everybody else, again, if you want to contact the show, milkcratesandturntables@gmail.com. And we are out.
David Bowie.